Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Larry Massett. It is somewhere between the ages of 10 and 12 that most children debate the great philosophical questions. What if life is only a dream? What if God is a jellyfish? Is there an end to the universe? And if so, what's on the other side of it? The big questions. They don't trouble to consult us, the adults, because they already know how ignorant we are. One question I recall from this age of exploration was, when would you choose to die? There was a girl down the street who had heard that if you ate too many carrots, your whole body would turn orange. Well, that's it, we agreed. No point in going on after that. We also agreed there was no reason to carry on into extreme senescence, say 30 or 40. And then there was the question of injury. What if you lost a hand? Two hands. Two hands and a foot, two hands, a foot, one ear. On these matters, there was a lot of argument, except for the extreme case. If you lost everything, so that you were just a disembodied head, then clearly there would be no advantage to life. No doubt about that, we were sure of it. We were wrong, of course. Today on Soundprint, producer Martin Thomas introduces us to a young Australian woman who, at the age of 12, did lose everything, became a quadriplegic. Her story is called All My Dreams Are About Dancing.
Amanda's face is tilted towards the canvas. Her paintbrush, clenched between her teeth, reaches towards the emerging figure of Merlin the Sorcerer. Amanda is painting. Her nurse holds the palette of acrylic paints, mixes the colours according to instruction, replenishes the paint when necessary. The canvas is moved frequently. She can only access a few square inches at a time. Merlin shifts, revolves as he appears, magically rendered in pointless fashion. Amanda is connected to a machine, itself connected to a PowerPoint. The machine is an LP6 volume ventilator, her mechanical lungs. These connections, the electric power cable, the plastic tubes that run from the respirator to a hole in her neck, attempt to compensate for a disconnection, a severance of the spinal cord so complete that her breath must be mechanized. Her four limbs are still.
Yeah, when I breathe out, I can't talk.
Talk to Amanda, and you soon realise the cosy conspiracy between speech and breath that most of us can take for granted. Respiration and conversation. But a respirator isn't so generous. It sucks and blows like a pendulum, leaving lengthy pauses when Amanda is both breathless and speechless, waiting for her lungs to fill. The rhythm of the machine dominates her as she tries to cram the experiences and emotions of an active consciousness into the limited moments of speech. So to understand Amanda, you have to reorientate your ears, accept the rhythm.
I did that for a while, then you try to breathe in. And obviously you can't, and then it freaks you.
So what does it feel like when you're trying to breathe and you can't?
Well, I can breathe a little bit, but not enough to see.
Her wheelchair forms an elevated throne where she sits completely upright, her limbs motionless, a cushioned on sheepskin. Her head can turn slightly. Her eyes are full of motion and look towards the cracked window or the shelves that line the opposing wall. A clutter of books, videos, tapes, compact discs, photographs, and a collection of dolls. Perhaps 50 of them. Some plastic and quite ordinary. Others are fairy princesses in glistening gowns. There's a resonance between their chalky faces and the matte whiteness of Amanda's skin. Amanda is 21 years old. She lives with her family, her mother, her brother, and a grandmother in the early stages of Alzheimer's.
The mother?
The daughter?
Her father died of a heart attack while jogging. She needs nurses to care for her 24 hours a day, who provide company and help bridge the outer world. A payout from an insurance company meets the huge cost of the nursing and medical expenses. Amanda paints, reads huge numbers of books, and studies for university entrance. Most of her grades are in the top 10% of the state.
What happened? Oh, you don't touch her, any other supplies other than, where's your spasm? No, you haven't?
Yes, I have.
Andy? Where? What happened? What happened? What made
touch
you
touch her?
Oh, see, I can't touch her, it's terrible.
She wears a leaf green dress and all sorts of jewellery, crescent moon earrings, gold bracelets and charms, and her fingernails are varnished red and adorned with tiny gilded stars.
I know it's weird, but I feel naked if I don't.
Your crosses?
You know, the cross on my head.
Can I have a look? Can I move the... Will it be alright if I move...
Yeah, it's got my initials and it's got a cross in it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Actually, I got the jade tiki. This guy called Arthur Black.
Yeah.
He was on spinal, you know, he was... Oh God, and he walked again. When he walked, it was really funny, actually, because he was walking, but he couldn't feel.
So he was a quad that could actually walk, huh?
I had to watch his feet because he couldn't feel. Have to have the light on so I could watch his feet because he couldn't. Couldn't tell when he was gonna fall over. When he left hospital, I had a walking stick. And he couldn't feel. And when he came back for his checkup, didn't have his walking stick and he could feel.
Really?
Before I left the hospital, he asked Mum to his room and he got out his drawing. He picked out a tiki and told Mum to give it to me. That she must always wear another way. But I like how it's got my initials on it.
So you don't have any feeling in your limbs the way he did?
I don't have any feeling. I have phantom pain.
You have what?
Phantom pain.
So you imagine you feel pain sometimes?
No, I feel pain all the time.
And that's like your...
It just feels like your whole body's been bashed.
Really?
Like, most of the time I just ignore it. Some days it gets bad. See, my face is really sensitive because... Because like, I don't know, feel my face. But at least it's not as sensitive as it used to be.
It's not.
I just had my accident, nobody could touch it.
Right.
Anybody touched it, literally felt like. So somebody got a needle and is slowly screwing it in. And my fanny pack was there. So this is not as sensitive as that.
Because I noticed, like when your limbs aren't straight or something, you feel that, you're aware of that in some way.
Oh, I just look, because I'm uncomfortable. If I'm not straight in a chair, it's uncomfortable. Just pull my neck out or whatever, but I can feel straight. When I'm not straight, I can't hold my head properly.
Uh-huh.
But when I was in spinal, Mum was sitting the other side of me. I couldn't see her. Because I was turned on my side, though. She was behind me. She was touching my hand and doing circles or whatever. On my hand, and I could tell her exactly what she was doing. That only ever happened once.
Living a life so grounded, so devoid of ordinary pleasures, how does she cope? How does she escape? What's she like in that inside imaginary space where thought is more or less unbounded by physical concerns?
When you're dreaming, are you, what's it like then?
Then sometimes in my dreams I'm walking. I'm in my wheelchair, and sometimes walking, but I still got my truck in my respirator.
Really?
Those dreams, I have to carry the respirator. Which is quite funny. I have a lot of dancing dreams. Actually, I had this one dream about my father passed. After he died, and apparently in my sleep after Dad died. Like, I only cried for 5 minutes when I found out. I never cried after that, and everybody used to say, it's not natural, a man does not cry. I don't need to. Apparently in my sleep I used to scream out. Apparently I used to sob hysterically. I had this one dream about Dad after he died. I dreamt I was in hospital and like getting rushed down the corridor in my bed. All these people around my bed rushing with me. There wasn't anybody that I knew. And I was looking at the person who was bagging me. And behind them, the person behind them. I couldn't see, I could just see their hair and it was the same colour. was my father's hair. All of a sudden I was in this, like, and I was walking with Dad, and he's saying, "The fuck, oh, you're gonna lock it here, you can do this. You know, you can do this and you can do that," and then all of a sudden I'm screaming, "I'm not dead, piss off. Get lost, Dad. Mum, come here and tell Dad I'm not." I never dreamed that once. Most of my dreams are about dancing. I have a really bad complex about myself. Like, I used to cover my chew with mud. I didn't like to look at people, I wouldn't look. I wouldn't look people in the eye. I still have a problem with that, but I'm better.
You notice people looking at you?
Oh, yeah. Just hate going out. I used to get people to push me from my feet so I didn't have to look at anybody.
Push you from your feet?
Yeah, so it pushed me backwards.
Uh-huh, right.
I just had to look at the person that was pushing me.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't bother me.
No.
Yeah, but I want to look back and look.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gets better of me and I'll stick my tongue out it.
Really?
But I haven't done that for a long time.
For God.
I was brought up as a Christian. Back when I was Christian, then I was converted. What happens is the bishop, puts his hand on your forehead and the Holy Spirit's supposed to go into you. Mm-hmm. I was confirmed after my accident. Mm-hmm. So this year I do Mass and
an ancient and art. Yeah.
How do you do the exam?
Half an hour of time, but that bull, because
they don't give you
enough
time, they just give you,
and they don't give you, yeah, they don't give you enough. Give you enough time to do it on the computer, so I can't do it on the computer. I have to give it orally. Because it's got full stops, apostrophes. Really pathetic.
Would you be able to start by telling me, well, what happened on the day of the accident?
The day of the accident, I was on my way to pick her. I took Amanda to school in the morning. Can I just say something first? Do you want me to say about being bullied at school? You don't care. Mandy has no memory of those early weeks.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, the particular morning of Amanda's accident, Amanda had asked me to drive her to school. And she'd just started high school. And the girls were bullying her, and she didn't particularly want to get on the bus. And I took her to school, and I told her that I was going in to speak to the headmistress, and she begged me not to and said no, she had to sort it out herself. So off she went, and we arranged to meet at my mother's place, where Amanda would go from there to dancing classes. And actually, before Amanda went, she walked across the road, and she turned around and ran back and kissed me and said, "I love you, Mum." And sadly, that was the last time I saw her walk, indeed run. And I drove home to my mother's place, expecting Amanda to run to me to go to dancing classes, and instead her brother was standing outside, and I was with a very dear friend. And he said Amanda had been hit and had been taken to hospital. And I ran to the window of my mother's dining room. And I must have been in shock, because I was screaming for John, my husband. And he was there, he'd been called. And we had to indeed go very quickly to the children's hospital. We were right behind the ambulance almost. And when we got there, Amanda had been taken into emergency, and what had happened, she'd gone down to get on the bus to come home that didn't go along the main road. And the girls had said if she got on the bus, they'd rearrange her face. So she ran down to Parramatta Road and got on the bus that came straight along the highway. And she didn't get off at the stop where she could walk across at the traffic lights with safety. She went to the next stop, which was on a bend in the highway, and the cars were just starting up from the traffic lights. And indeed, it was across the road from the street my mother lived in. Apparently, from all accounts, she got off the bus and she walked in front of the bus, and she looked right and left, but she didn't look right again, and she was hit by a car that had pulled out from behind the bus. And only that an ambulance was on the other side of the road, and the ambulance driver was delivering the bus up the mountains. He wasn't even on duty. He saw Amanda frozen in the middle of the road, and he just ran. She wouldn't have survived if he hadn't been there. She only had moments to go. And he did the most amazing job of resuscitation and took her straight to the hospital, and we were there soon after. And they all told me that she'd had a terrible injury and that her neck was broken, and she would have to go to Royal North Shore Hospital. No one expected her to survive. And the police were wonderful. They were guardian angels. One went ahead and stopped the traffic lights, two either side of us, and they guided us over the road on the most incredible, incredible journey to hospital. And we got there, and yes, the doctor there said to me that they didn't think she would survive. And she kept surviving and surviving, and they said she wouldn't last the night, and she did. And she had a lot of tubes in her mouth, making her breathe with the respirator, and her little mouth was getting hurt, and they said they wanted to do a tracheostomy on her. I, of course, cried and didn't want them to do it. I didn't want anything to happen to her anymore. But it was the best thing, because she had such peace after that. And then the doctors called me in and said that she needed antibiotics. And my husband was very annoyed with me at the time, that I had agreed for them to give her antibiotics, because he didn't want her to suffer anymore, and he was very mad with me. But Mandy had survived pneumonia and fought it. Her little body had fought it all herself, and I thought she deserved the opportunity to keep going. Indeed, in those early first week or two, Amanda begged me to pull out the plugs, and I sat there beside her for a very long time, and the early hours of the morning I was in torment, and the top of a trachea popped off, and she begged me to put it back on, and I realised in that moment that she very much wanted to live, and I haven't looked back since then, and neither has she. She's the most amazing child. And yes, and here we are. Well, Amanda's now 21 and she was 12 when she was hit, so I think the proof's in the pudding. Mm. And we have a very talented girl, brilliant student and wonderful painter and wonderful girl. Yep, she's got the most incredible courage. Absolutely. Mm. Makes you feel very humble.
Yes.
And as you said, if it's affected my life, I think it has brought us closer together, all of us. I mean, it's a tragedy and one that haunts me every day, but as long as Amanda's got this gumption, and by golly she has, it keeps us all going. She rules the roost.
Mm.
You know, and her room is the centre of the house, the heart of the house, I call it. And she spies everybody coming in and out that door. Nobody comes in without you knowing, do they?
I'll check them out.
All of My Dreams Are About Dancing was produced by Martin Thomas for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. This program is part of Soundprint's international collaboration series, Crossing Boundaries. Next week on Soundprint, we take you on a scientific sailing trip around the Gulf of Maine.
Here are some green algae, which are probably the precursors of the higher plants that have gradually worked their ways up hundreds of millions of years ago to lead to the higher plants.
Tides of Maine, next week on Soundprint. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU at the American University. Thanks also to WJHU and WVPN. Additional support for this program is provided by this and other NPR member stations and the NPR Information Fund, whose contributors include the Trust for Mutual Understanding. Write us with your ideas and comments. Write Soundprint, 4000 Brandywine Street, Northwest, Suite 620, Washington, D.C., 20016. Cassettes are $12.50. If you want to order a cassette with a credit card, call us at 202-885-1285. Again, the number is 202-885-1285. On the internet, our address is soundprint@american.edu. Soundprint is Technical Director Anna Maria De Freitas, Studio Engineer Robin Wise, and Production Assistant Francesca Raymond. The Executive Producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Larry Massett.